always on the go, but the day just won't be one without your Hollywood fix. Let Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast take care of that. An all-inclusive look of pop culture.
Greetings, people of Earth and the known universe. You're listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith. And today's headlines, Jay-Z Love Child, Roseanne canceled, and Kim Kardashian pee reform. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting episode. Hope everyone had a great Memorial Day weekend, holiday, all that good stuff. No, I did. Now, let's get to it. First on deck, Nicki Minaj alludes to Eminem relationship in response to a fan comment. So, yes, apparently Nicki's got jokes for days. And YG's new track, Big Bank, Nicki Minaj rhymes, back-to-back Maybach, stack the M's, told him I met Slim Shady, bag the M, once he go black, he'll be back again. Posting a section of her verse on Instagram to promote the track, Nicki changed the lyrics to bagged M-E-M for her caption, prompting some fans to believe that she began dating Eminem. Slim Shady is one of the most reclusive artists today, and it's unlikely that he would confirm such news. So Nicki took it upon herself to seemingly confirm a relationship with rap legend in response to one of her fans. Miss Minaj was asked by one of her fans if she was dating Marshall Mathers, to which the Pink Friday star responded with a simple yes. No shame, no shame. Unfortunately for those wishing the two would create a rap power couple, it's unlikely that the two are actually cuddling up to each other at night, as Nicki has been trolling on social media since her return from a long hiatus. Thankfully, her diehard Barbies are not taking the announcement seriously, as they are praising her sense of humor in response to the comment. While there will always be some gullible supporters that believe everything in front of their eyes, this is a classic example of Nicki's clever wordplay being taken out of context. While the percentages are slim that Shady and Nicki are an item, if they are indeed dating, what would their celebrity couple name be? That's a good question. Would they be like Nim? Image? Yeah, I mean, that's actually a fun thing to talk about or to ponder. If Nicki Minaj and Eminem are actually dating, I like Nim and I like Image, E-M-A-J, or Eminaj. Eminaj, there you go. I like that. What do you think? Oh, yeah, that's fun. And in more entertainment news, so it appears that Mr. Steve Harvey, give me one second here, making sure I have everything working properly. All right, okay. So yes, in other entertainment news, another day, another lawsuit. Steve Harvey sued by ex-wife's friend for defamation and despicable conduct. So here, yeah. So let's get into that. So a picture of Steve Harvey holding the microphone, smiling, that trademark Steve Harvey smile with his nice, cool, like navy blue suit on. I don't know what he's looking at, but, you know, he's looking pretty dapper there. So states that. And let me make sure. Okay. So I might be missing part of my notes on this. So give me one second, folks. And trust me, I'm looking forward to reporting all my entertainment news for you, because it's always fun and fascinating stuff to know. That's the best way to describe it, because it surprises me. It really does. Let's see. Yes. So, in what has been dubbed the Mary Vaughn curse, it's been reported that a friend of Harry's ex has filed a multi-pronged lawsuit against the Family Feud host, accusing him and his goons of harassment, intimidation, and like the murder of her emotional state of mind after he learned she was in talks to do a reality show with Mary. So, I've never heard that expression before, but okay, we'll go with it. So, Essie Berry has reportedly filed a $5 million lawsuit against the Kings of Comedy star for defamation, despicable conduct, intentional infliction of mental anguish, and emotional distress after, according to Berry, he engineered a years-long campaign of malicious intimidation and sabotage. According to court documents filed on May 22nd, Berry is the widow of sitcom star Fred Berry from the classic show What's Happening. Harvey allegedly worked overtime to ruin her character and credibility after she teamed with Vaughn for negotiations to participate in a reality show called Widows, Wives, and Ex-Celebrity Wives. She was not privy to the fact that Vaughn had signed a non-disclosure agreement during her divorce from Harvey that forbids her from speaking on anything related to their former marriage. Once Harvey found out that such a reality show was in the works, Berry said Harvey referred to her as an extortionist and a co-conspirator. The defendant went to great lengths to make Miss Berry's life a living hell, Berry wrote in court docs. Okay. Yeah, this is becoming interesting. Harvey countered Berry's accusations as unsubstantiated and meritless. According to the report, Berry fired a few counterstrikes, saying Harvey had a mysterious male hiding in the bushes while peeing inside a friend's home windows. While peering inside of a friend's home windows in an effort to find Berry. Sorry about that. When someone saw the man peeking in the window, he was confronted. Berry wrote in a new complaint. This is when he identified himself as an affiliate of Harvey, not an officer of any court. He asked for the plaintiff by first name, then ran off. Mm. Berry responded by filing a police report and getting a restraining order against Harvey. She is asking the courts for $5 million in damages for emotional distress and other health-related issues due to her extreme fear of the Harvey camp. Wow. So we will see where all that leads. Yeah, that's becoming kind of complicated. And in other news, Antoine Fuqua signs on to direct a thriller called The Street. Filmmaker Antoine Fuqua has secured his next project. The director has signed on to direct The Street, which Goodfellas writer Nicholas Pileggi is penning for Thule Entertainment. So the storyline is yet to be disclosed, but the film is described as a thriller set against the backdrops of New York and Shanghai. The deal comes as Sony prepares for the July 20th release of Fuqua's The Equalizer Part 2, the first sequel for the filmmaker and his star Denzel Washington. Don't forget they also worked on Training Day together as well. Fuqua also serves as executive producer on Fox's The Resident, which was recently renewed for a second season. Additionally, he's directing and executive producing with LeBron James an untitled HBO multi-part documentary film about the life and career of Muhammad Ali. On the big screen, Fuqua also recently came back aboard the Scarface at Universal. So I guess they're going to remake Scarface. So I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So we'll see. We'll see. And in more news, entertainment news, Issa Rae. Yes. The Insecure star channels black TV icons for GQ photo shoot. So Issa Rae has portrayed television stars who came before her. It looks pretty cool. The actor and producer posed for a feature in which she discusses her career journey and life as the showrunner and star of HBO's Insecure, which is a great show, by the way. You should check it out. In the behind-the-scenes footage of her photo shoot, Rae is seen portraying Steve Urkel from Family Matters, and the title role of Moesha, played by Brandy, and Will Smith's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, as well as Dwayne Wade from A Different World. Brandy was so impressed with her ode that she showed love to Issa Rae on Twitter by saying, You're such a beautiful spirit. Thank you for portraying me in your GQ magazine shoot for Black TV Icons. So that's nice. So yeah, the pictures are pretty cool. You see a picture of Issa looking like Moesha, Brandy. Her picture of her doing Dwayne Wayne from A Different World, and her Will Smith is cool. And the funniest one is her doing Urkel with the suspenders and the floods. Wow, she is a funny and talented lady, definitely. Very cool. I'm looking forward to catching that issue of GQ. So Octavia E. Butler is a science fiction novelist. She's deceased, did science fiction. Well, I just said that, didn't I? Don't mind me, folks. So she has a story called A Parable. It's a warning gone unheeded. So it's in her science fiction classic Parable of the Sower, we see America's dark future through the eyes of a 15-year-old black girl named Lauren. It talks about climate change, corporate greed, and inequality and wealth, and all these things have ripped the society apart. Clean water is an expensive commodity, and public education is being defunded. Wow, so this is a book that she wrote. This is deep. Similar to the rise of our current president, a candidate named Christopher Donner emerges and promises to bring back jobs. His opponent, a religious zealot named Andrew Jarrett, promises to make America great again. It's all very prophetic for a book written in 1993. That's why I'm reporting on this, because this was a book written years ago, sci-fi. It's pretty. I might have to pick up this book. Butler's bone-chilling, prescient vision of the future has become partially true. Her understanding of the rhetoric of division shows how much foresight she had about America and the world. Butler wrote the future present in her two books in the Parable series by extrapolating the news in the 90s and closely studying American history. She knew what was possible if corporations, mass incarcerations, big drug companies, and gun violence were left unchecked. Mind you, this is just a science fiction story that she wrote about, and often art can't imitate life. That's what makes it so fascinating and at times compelling, whether it's paintings, portraits, poetry, story writing, you name it, music. Butler saw history as a cyclical phenomenon where what we call the future is actually the past amplified. Butler's understanding of history made her painfully aware that all societal progress could be reversed. Bankole, B-A-N-K-O-L-E, one of the characters that Lauren encounters in the book, tells her this country has slipped back 200 years. It sounds eerily similar to the exasperated statements we make to each other in recent times. Despite the prophetic nature of her work, Octavia E. Butler considered Parable as a cautionary tale. Sadly, we didn't pay heed to the caution within the stories. To face the horrors of the future, Butler imagined a young black heroine who formulates a new belief, Earth Seed, and becomes the hope for humankind's future. Lauren's journey after losing her parents to tragedy and her fight for survival prepares her to lead a community that might be civilization's last chance. This itself is of great importance. Not only did Butler predict the revival of divisive politics, but she also saw the future was female. Right on. One of Lauren's Earthseed mantras, God is change, carries with its courage to embrace the uncertain future rather than fearing it. Only rising above fear of change will we be able to write our own destinies. When seen through the lens of the current political climate, it means that we need to adapt and actively fight for our future rather than give up to this new divided America. It just might transform the country for the better. So it sounds like a great book, actually, and it's really cool when so many science fiction authors will write a great story that will often predict what will happen and foretell what will happen down the line. So, you know, I think that's very fascinating. I mean, Miss Butler is not the only science fiction writer to do that. So I think that's very cool. Very, very, very fascinating. When you look at movies like A Clockwork Orange, directed by Stanley Kubrick, that movie was kind of very foretelling about the future and ultra violence and how it can be decadent in today's society. So it's all about interpretation, definitely. But I've, yeah, so glad I talked about that. That's very cool. Octavia Butler, The Parable of the Sower.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's GSMCpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
And we're back. Once again, you're listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith. And Mel B's custody drama with X may keep her off of the X Factor. So what's going on with that? So let's find out. And yes, Mel B from the Spice Girls, folks. Scary Spice. I'm not going to say she was my favorite, because she was. Anyway. Melanie Mel B. Brown's ongoing custody battle with ex-husband Stephen Belafonte may cause her to miss out on the return to this year's X Factor. The Spice Girls, seen as a contender to replace Nicole Scherzinger after the singer was axed. However, Mel would likely face legal challenges from Belafonte if she chooses to spend months in London with their daughter. Insiders say that Mel wants to take their daughter, Madison 6, who Belafonte shares joint custody of, with her and her other children for the duration of the show. But that would mean having to apply for permission from a judge in Los Angeles to take Madison out of the country. And her ex would also have to agree. Belafonte sources say he would fight against Madison being away for as long as 4 months. Mel and Belafonte are still battling over visitation rights for Angel, who's 10, her chat with Eddie Murphy. So she would be expected to attend any court hearings as pertaining to the case. Brown's legal drama could mean show bosses rule her out of a return to the ITV series, which she last filmed in 2014. A source told The Sun Online, Mel is interested in The X Factor. She knows the show and loves working with Simon and does resonate with audiences. But there would be a problem if she took the job for sure, as her husband would want to make sure Madison remains near him. He could push that in court, and it could take months to resolve. Also, if he wins rights to see Angel, then that too would mean them having to come to visitation deals, which again would likely mean her having to jet back regularly with Angel. The couple are just not pushing back on their anger for one another over their kids. The thought of a deal being done to allow her to go to London for 3 to 4 months is unthinkable. The source added, Mel's predicament is likely to also weigh heavily on the mind of show bosses and Simon. They do not want to become embroiled in any of these personal matters. It is likely that she will miss out the way things stand at present. Meanwhile, Mel has been juggling America's Got Talent and Spice Girl projects along with her bitter court battles with Belafonte. The warring couple got divorced in December, but are still embroiled in custody disputes over Madison and Angel. Stephen, who has been awarded joint custody of Madison, now wants step-parent visitation to stepdaughter Angel 10, who he has helped raise since birth. Okay, well, so we wish they can work that out. So when we have more news on that, we'll let you know. ABC cancels Roseanne after Roseanne Barr compares Valerie Jarrett to Planet of the Apes. Yes. It's definitely over for Roseanne. It's been stated that after her racist tweet this morning comparing former President Barack Obama's senior advisor, Valerie Jarrett, to the offspring of the Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes, the network's African-American president, Channing Dungey, announced that the show has been canceled. Roseanne's Twitter statement is abhorrent, repugnant, and inconsistent with our values, and we have decided to cancel her show, said Dungey. Before the axing, consulting producer Wanda Sykes announced that she was leaving her position due to the comments. So, quote from Ms. Sykes, "I will not be returning to at Roseanne on ABC," Sykes tweeted, following the offensive comment. Barr referred to Jared as Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby while responding to a tweet that alleged that Jared helped hide a lot. That was a reference to WikiLeaks' claim that the CIA during Obama's term spied on candidates for the French election. Jared, an African-American, was born in Iran to American parents. She went on to serve as one of President Obama's closest advisors. "I apologize to Valerie Jarrett and to all Americans. I am truly sorry for making a bad joke about her politics and her looks. I should have known better. Forgive me, my joke was in bad taste," Barr wrote on Twitter, later adding, "I'm leaving Twitter now. I'm now leaving Twitter." A spokesman for Jarrett says she had no comment, according to Variety. Meanwhile, a Los Angeles-based civil rights leader, Najee I, CEO of Project Islamic Hope, is calling upon Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey to permanently suspend the Twitter account for Roseanne Barr because of the controversial tweet. In the tweet, ABC star attacked Jared, who was born in Iran as a child to the Islamist organization Muslim Brotherhood in the movie Planet of the Apes. "Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a bad baby," equals VJ, Barr wrote, using Jared's initials and responding to a tweet accusing her former Obama advisor of helping hide misdeeds of the Obama administration. This just gets murkier and murkier. Barr racist tweets is not free speech, it's hate speech. The racism and derogatory comments against Jared that Barr spewed out comparing her to an ape is something that no human being or corporation should support. Barr shouldn't be allowed to just walk away from Twitter. She should be banned by Dorsey for using Twitter to spread her racist comments. We're also calling for a meeting with ABC executives to meet with the coalition of civil rights leaders and groups to call upon them to repudiate Barr and discuss with us what steps the ABC network will undergo with Barr and all talent under contract with ABC to ensure this type of hateful rhetoric isn't spewed again by talent they have under contract. This is all what Mr. Dungey has. This is his quote. So not mine, his, just reporting that. A plan for a possible boycott of the corporate sponsors of Roseanne, which has been a top show on the ABC network, is now being discussed with civil rights leaders. A conference call will be scheduled and stated not. Najee Ali, the CEO from Project Islamic Hope. So there isn't any further news in that regard, but yes, the Roseanne Barr show has been canceled at this time. So when we have more news, we'll let you know. Portia Williams hilariously scores on Andy Cohen's Love Connection. So if there's anything we know about Portia Williams, it's that she carries both beauty and brains. With her 10th season of The Real Housewives of Atlanta just ending, it's safe to say she's out here living for her best life. For all you single fellas out there hoping to score a lucky chance with Portia herself, you may be in for a treat as Portia is set to appear on the all-time favorite Love Connection, which returns on Fox for another jaw-dropping season and hosted by Andy Cohen from Watch What Happens Live. Love Connection. It would be kind of interesting to be on that show. Do I have the guts and the nerve to go on there looking for a Love Connection? I don't know if I do. I got to think about that. It does intrigue me, though. It really does. It's amazing, Andy told, and Andy stated, Portia's upcoming June 19th appearance. You know my worry about her, because we've seen from Real Housewives of Atlanta, she goes fast. She goes really fast. But it went great. She is legitimately looking to settle down and fall in love and have kids. So she's really engaged and into it. That's nice. Each episode takes place for an hour where love connections sends a single man or woman on three blind dates. Once the dates are over, he slash she will check into the studio in front of a live audience where they will then spill all the details. Man, that could actually be nerve-wracking. Okay, so you're going to go on a first date with somebody. You're already nervous. I don't care who you are, guy or girl. So can you imagine going on a first date and there's cameras following you and knowing that this is going to be on TV? So if the date goes well, you're like, hey, he's the guy, or that's the girl. They're awesome. And if the date doesn't go well, man, you're just going to get clowned. Just saying, you're going to get clowned. It's going to be embarrassing. But you know, anyone who does this is courageous. So I give them all credit, because it's not easy to put yourself out there. So you know, respect to the people, to the contestants of this game show. The live studio audience will also play a big role on who's going home with who, as they're voting on who they think made a love connection, which can result in some serious cash. Unlike season one, the primary dater doesn't have to choose between money or love. Really? Okay. The primary dater would win $10,000 if the audience's prediction is correct. Buckle up for this season, as we will see some pretty happy endings, turnoffs, and unexpected turns intertwined with laughs. Brought to you by America's favorite host, Andy Cohen. I mean, this episode will leave you in tears as the men all battle it out for Portia's heart. And trust me when I tell you, it does not come easy. So we have to check out Portia's Love Connection on June 19th on Fox. Love Connection is produced by Warner Horizon. It's unscripted and alternative television and Next Entertainment in association with Tell Pictures Productions. Mike Feist, The Bachelor, Mighty Hilton, The Bachelor, James Breen, So You Think You Can Dance, and American Idol, and Jason Ehrlich, The Bachelor, serve as executive producers. Cohen also serves as a co-executive producer. Okay. So, yeah, I haven't watched the new version of Love Connection, but I'm going to have to check it out now. I'm going to see what Miss Portia does. I mean, yeah, I do. And more news. Jay-Z's secret son accuses rapper of avoiding paternity tests for 8 years. Now, that's the headline. But it has not been proven that he is Jay-Z's son. That's allegedly still. But it is very interesting. So let's dig in. The paternity saga continues with Jay-Z's alleged son, Rymer Satterthwaite. The 24-year-old claims the rapper has managed to play the court system for 8 years in order to avoid taking a DNA test. He now has an upcoming paternity trial in Philly in December and says this is not about lining his pockets or making a come-up off of Hov's legacy. I don't want money or anything like that from Jay-Z, he said in an exclusive interview with Sun Online. I just want him to finally tell the truth to the world. Rymer, an aspiring musician, claims he has been denied the right to have a fair hearing in court because of legal mistakes and malpractice. Okay, well, if there's been legal mistakes and malpractice and you're stating that, okay, so that usually means that you can't blame Jay-Z for that, if that's from what you're stating so far in that regard. He's supposed to be a positive role model for our community. Quote, he stands there screaming Black Lives Matter. Well, tell the truth and take responsibility, he added. And if you say I'm not your son, nothing ever happened with my mom, then just take the test. If you're telling the truth, then why is your first answer whenever you're asked to take a paternity test? No, I want a fair due process in court, regardless of who my father is or how rich he is. There's also a picture of Jay-Z off of in my Lifetime Volume 1 the record cover and Ramir making the same pose. I mean, there's a similarity. I mean, he could be Jay-Z's son, but there's no concrete proof. I mean, it's possible, but I'm looking at the picture of the two of them, and I can't say that he's a dead ringer. I'm not going to say that. He could be. This could go either way, literally. It really could. So we will get back to Jay-Z and his possible love child after this break.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Back once again, you're listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith, and we're talking about Jay-Z having a possible love child. Yes, so more on that story. Ramir was first told by his mother, Wanda, that she believed, you know, the Jigga or Hove, is that he's called, he's got a few different nicknames, Jay-Z, was his father when he was around 8. Wanda has claimed that she hooked up with Jay-Z, then known as Rock, in 1992 at his aunt's apartment in Brooklyn after he picked her up from Philadelphia. Okay. According to the report, the pair allegedly used protection, but it failed. And aside from a visit from Jay 2 weeks later, Wanda and Mr. Carter never saw each other again, and she had no idea how to contact him. Although her live-in boyfriend, Robert Graves, was originally listed on the birth certificate, he was legally removed in 2001 after a DNA test proved he was not the father. Ouch. Yeah. Jay-Z has never publicly spoken about the case, but his lawyer stated that the rapper is not an interested party with respect to the custody of Ramir Satterthwaite. In legal papers filed in 2011, he added, there has been no determination or viable claim of familial relationship with Mr. Carter. Okay. Satterthwaite is desperate to prove Jay-Z is actually his dad, and he's sick of people assuming he is making up the claims in order to jumpstart his career. Now, I will say this, for what we just heard and the description that his mother gave about how she met him, it sounds pretty detailed. I mean, it could be made up, but it just sounds very detailed and kind of specific. So, just makes this more interesting, more intriguing. Whenever you have people with lots of money against ordinary people, it's going to be a fight. But I believe the system was more on his side than on mine. Than on mine. I didn't get a fair due process in court. I never got my chance to talk, he said. It got pushed to the side, and basically now I walk around and everybody's looking at me and saying, he's chasing Jay-Z. He wants money. He's trying to get his 15 minutes of fame. This never about money for me. My whole thing was just to see who my father was. And honestly, I get my own money. I work 2 jobs. I take care of my business. I've got a positive family behind me that helps me with everything I do. It wasn't like I needed anything. I just needed closure, and I wanted respect from the courts. Just like everybody else goes in there and gets respect and gets a fair due process, why didn't I get that? Why did I just get brushed to the side? Is it because of somebody's name? Is it because somebody was getting paid off? I will never know, he added. We're all equal in this world, and no one should think they're better than somebody just because they can pay 40 or 50 lawyers to fight for you. That doesn't make you better than nobody. That makes you a coward. Mr. Satterthwaite feels very strongly about this. Rymir, if I'm saying his name right, who works at a restaurant and at a pet store as well as writing and recording music, said no one gets fame off chasing Jay-Z. He said, This is one of the most powerful men in music right now. What am I getting from chasing him, screaming that he's my father? I'm getting nothing out of it. I've been hearing this so much, and it makes me sick because I bust my butt working day today, and I take care of myself, and I take care of my family. Well, so when there's more news in regards to what happens with Mr. Rymir Satterthwaite and whether or not Jay-Z takes a paternity test, well, when we find out, you'll know too. Definitely wish that you do find out who your father is. That is important stuff to know. Everybody should know where they come from. All right. And in more entertainment news, Kenya Moore, reportedly fired from Real Housewives, absent from the mandatory casting meeting. The rumors and whispering that have been swirling for months about whether Kenya Moore would be fired from the Real Housewives of Atlanta for her alleged deceit might be accurate. According to sources who spoke to Straight From the A, Moore has officially had her coveted peach snatched. That's referring to Georgia Peach. As previously reported, the Detroit-born beauty queen has been caught in a web of lies that have worn thin with Bravo execs. She enraged Real Housewives of Atlanta producers last summer when she wed businessman Mark Daly in an ultra-private Caribbean-style ceremony and failed to inform her employers about it. Nor did she invite Bravo honchos or her castmates to the island event. I didn't know that went down that way. Furthermore, many Real Housewives of Atlanta fans are currently debating about whether Moore is even pregnant or if she's pretending to be as a way to manufacture a storyline and remain employed by Bravo. According to Straight from the A, when the cast assembled for a mandatory cast meeting for season 11, Moore was not present. Kenya's lie was outed about a week ago when season 11 peach holders and friends assembled for a mandatory cast meeting. Moore was not in attendance, and when asked about her absence, it was confirmed that she wasn't invited back. I've heard that Kenya may possibly be relegated to friend status, but her pride probably won't allow that. The source also claims that Moore might be demoted to friend of the show, but fans of the show know her ego won't settle for a part-time role. So far, the cast members who have been invited back include Cynthia Bailey, NeNe Leakes, Candy Burris, and Portia Williams, and Ava Marcille, who is currently the friend status, as well as part-timers Marlo Hampton and Shamia Morton, could claim Kenya Moore's peach and get bumped up to full-time players on the series. Well, I mean, this is how it happens. There's always someone ready to take your spot, especially when you're in a high-profile position. In more news, Prince's Island Retreat in Turks and Caicos is on the market for sale. And I got to tell you, folks, I'm looking at it. I mean, this is like his own private little island. Looks really nice. A New York auction house is taking sealed bids on an island villa owned by the late singer in Turks and Caicos, according to the Star Tribune. Okay, so now, before I even get further into the story, the late, great, former, iconic, genius musician Prince is gone. Rest in peace, rest in paradise. So, the family's going to be selling off some of his property. Okay, so now, I just don't understand why it's a sealed sale. So if someone has the money to buy the island, why is it being a private sale? I mean, does it matter who buys the island as long as they have the money? I mean, I don't understand why that's making it kind of exclusive, and not inclusive. So I don't get why it's a sealed sale. Are there certain people you don't want to have the property? I suppose there is. I just don't get that. So if I'm trying to sell my house, I'm not going to make it a sealed sale. I'm going to put the sign on the lawn saying, hey, I'm selling the house. So, as long as you're not a mass murderer or a killer, hey, you got the money, come on through. Just saying. But okay. Anyway. The 5.74 acre property is surrounded by water on three sides and includes several buildings with more than 10,000 square feet. There are two private beaches, a marina, and a long winding driveway that Prince painted purple right after he bought the property in 2011. It was a little gift to himself, said Todd Wall, a Premier Estates auction company, which is handling the auction. It's quite a property. The water around it is about as blue and crystal clear as you could ever imagine. According to these pictures, it looks beautiful. It looks like you're going to the Caribbean on a cruise. It's one of those islands. I'm like, yeah, this is really, yeah, I mean, yeah. You know you have money when you got a place like this. You know that's when you're rich. So, yeah, okay. Prince paid an estimate of $10.5 million for the property, which had been built by a British family as a retreat in the early 2000s. He then bought two adjacent lots of an additional $2.5 million to ensure his privacy. Okay. The property is expected to fetch at least $15 million at auction. Based on the last two big sales in the area, a house on a 4.5-acre parcel sold for $7.625 million, and a house on 5.3 acres on Parrot K sold for $17 million. $2.5 million less than the asking price. The sealed bid auction ends on July 12th to give prospective bidders time to visit the property. Bidders must provide proof of funds and a $100,000 registration deposit. So wait a minute. So there's a $100,000 deposit for the private bid. So now if you lose the bid, do you get that money back? Just wondering. Okay. All right. Hey, what do I know? Prince's estate began selling off properties from his real estate portfolio in late 2016, including the site of the former Purple House on Lake Riley in Chanhazen, where Prince once lived, and a 160-acre undeveloped parcel near Lake Ann, also in Chanhazen. The property's four listings were valued at more than $15 million. All right. Very cool. So it'll be interesting to see who actually buys that property. Still trying to figure out why the whole thing is a private auction. I don't know about that. John Stamos and wife Caitlin McHugh want more kids as soon as possible. So apparently John Stamos and his wife are working on their own full house, literally. The stunning couple wed in February and welcomed their son Billy in April. And now they're ready to expand their family ASAP. Caitlin, 32, isn't kidding. Last week, she gushed to Entertainment Tonight that she and John would like to have more children as soon as I can. She explained, right now, Billy is extremely spoiled and we need to share the love. He's got to share some of those toys and all the things that have been given to him. He needs siblings to keep him grounded. If he's the only one, he'll get way too much love because there hasn't been a child on either side of our family in quite some time. Okay, yeah. I can understand that, definitely. The top priority for the Stamos family, healthy babies. However, Caitlin admitted John would love to welcome a little lady to their brood. I would love to give him a little girl, but we're happy with boy, girl, just healthy, she dished. For now, the couple is fully focused on Billy physically. Caitlin revealed that their newborn has daddy's blue eyes and scowl face and mommy's small ears. Biologically, they're celebrating every single one of Billy's milestones. That's really cool. It's adorable. Even all the gas and stuff. Everything he does is exciting. It's like, oh, yes, you pooped. That's great. You farted. That's great. You burped right in my ear. You spit up on my face and I couldn't be happier, Caitlin said with a laugh. There's a lot of positive reinforcement in our house for literally everything. That's because you're first time parents and all that stuff is special. So I think that's great. By your second or third baby, we'll see if you're still saying that, but I think that's awesome. Very excited for you folks. The brunette beauty couldn't help but marvel at how seamlessly John transitioned into dad life and diaper duty and all. He used to say he's not going to change any diapers, and he's changed so many diapers. He totally doesn't mind. It's beautiful seeing John with Billy. It all feels so right. It feels like this is the way it should have always been. He comes so naturally to fatherhood, and I love watching it. I stare at the both of them all the time, Caitlin said, beaming. John is 100% full-on active and fantastic. He's perfect. He's a perfect father. I can't wait to give him more kids. While parenting has become their primary focus, Caitlin says the couple is also finding ways to prioritize their marriage and sneak away for the occasional date night. She explained, I understand what it takes, that it takes a village to raise a child, and it's important for our relationship to be strong in order to keep the whole family together and keep everything good. So it's important to take time for yourself and for your partner and to really have a life balance. So we do that. We'll have someone watch him for a couple of hours and we'll sneak off and see a movie or have dinner or catch up with friends. We're still back before 10 o'clock. John and Caitlin aren't just parents and parenting and marriage. They've also collaborated creatively on an inspirational new jewelry line, appropriately called Saint Amos, which is available now. They teamed up with My Saint, My Hero to design a handwoven bracelet that benefits an organization close to their heart, Child Help. So that's really cool. So congratulations to both of you on your newborn baby, Billy. And we'll be back with more entertainment news after this break.
Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
And we're back. Once again, you're listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith. And this might be the best for last. I'm not even sure, but I just, it's just something about the Kardashians. Kim Kardashian arrives to White House to discuss prison reform with President Trump. Yes. And there's a picture of Kim at the White House standing next to President Trump as he sits at his desk. And man, is he cheesing. He's got a big old smile on his face. He really does. So, all right. So Kim Kardashian released the following statements to E! News after meeting with President Donald Trump at the White House. I would like to thank President Trump for his time this afternoon. It is our hope that the president will grant clemency to Miss Alice Marie Johnson, who is serving a life sentence for a first-time nonviolent drug offense. We are optimistic about Miss Johnson's future and hopeful that she and so many like her will get a second chance at life. Okay. Very cool. Caption, Kim Kardashian takes the White House. The Keeping Up with the Kardashian star is in Washington, D.C. to meet with President Donald Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to discuss prison reform. She will sit down with the president and is planning to ask him to pardon a woman. We just mentioned her name, serving a life sentence without parole for a first-time drug offense. And I wonder how that even happened. Kim was photographed arriving to the White House on Wednesday afternoon wearing a black pantsuit and lime green heels. After the meeting, Trump tweeted, "Great meeting with Kim Kardashian today. Talked about prison reform and sentencing." Earlier this month, E! News learned that Kim was in talks with Jared to pardon the 62-year-old great-grandmother, Alice Marie Johnson. Alice is currently serving a life sentence for a first-time nonviolent drug offense. It's been over 20 years since she began her sentence in a federal prison in 1996. Wow. That is a... I'm sorry, I'm just, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast today, that, you know, when you do these, when we research these stories and read them, sometimes, you know, it surprises us the things that we find out. Yeah, it really does. So I have been in management for 10 years when I lost my job. Alice can be heard explaining her case in the video. I struggled financially. I couldn't find a job fast enough to take care of my family. I felt like a failure. I went into a complete panic, and out of desperation, I made one of the worst decisions of my life to make some quick money. She continued, I believed in a drug conspiracy. I became involved in a drug conspiracy. Kim first publicly discussed Alice's case back in October 2017 when she tweeted an article about her imprisonment. This is so unfair, Kim wrote to her Twitter followers. So, let's see. The following month, the New York Daily News reported that Kim had enlisted her lawyer to help the clemency campaign of Alice and Centoya Brown. Kim's lawyer, Sean Holly, told the publication at the time that Alice has been a model's prisoner and has the support of the warden, government officials, and hosts of others in their bid for release. So that's cool. So the warden and other people support her being released. Okay, so definitely going to keep you informed on how that story unfolds. Yeah, that's a pretty, that was a pretty important thing that Ms. Kardashian did today. Wow. Very cool. Very cool. And in other news, entertainment news. Oh, and by the way, so she tweeted on Twitter, says, "Happy birthday, Alice Marie Johnson. Today was for you." And it looks like it's the American Eagle, the seal, and it's probably on the Oval Office floor carpet. Looks pretty cool. It's really nice, actually. So that was a very nice thing that she did. And in more entertainment news, I mean, where do I start? It was so much more fun. Give me one moment. Yes. Hot off the presses. The estate of Michael Jackson files federal infringement lawsuit against ABC. Yes, they did. So, the estate of Michael Jackson filed a federal lawsuit in Los Angeles against the Walt Disney Company and ABC for their willful and intentional infringements of dozens of copyrights owned by the estate that were used without permission in the ABC primetime special, The Last Days of Michael Jackson, which broadcast last week. Disney and ABC committed willfully and intentional copyright infringement when they used the estate's copyrighted materials without the estate's permission. Disney's conduct here was particularly surprising given that it has no tolerance for anyone using its copyrighted material, even the most trivial of manners. So, Disney and ABC's conduct is also contrary to law and industry practice, and despite several cautionary letters from the estate to Disney and ABC attorneys, Disney and ABC never sought the Jackson estate's permission to use any of the material owned by the estate in the broadcast. I mean, the plot thickens. Can you imagine using Disney's intellectual property like Mickey Mouse, Cinderella, Star Wars, The Avengers, Toy Story, and so many other works without asking Disney's permission or getting a license? The estate has no choice but to vigorously protect its intellectual property, which is the lifeblood of its business, said Howard Weitzman of Kinsella Weitzman, Iser Kump, and Aldersert LLP, who with his partner Jonathan Steinsapir filed the lawsuit for the Jackson estate. Okay. Among the other estate copyrighted materials used without permission by ABC and Disney are significant and repeated excerpts of Michael Jackson's most valuable songs and recordings like Billie Jean, Beat It, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, Bad, Leave Me Alone, and many others. Two, substantial portions of Michael Jackson's groundbreaking music videos like Thriller, Black or White, Bad, and almost a dozen others. 3, large swaths of footage from Michael Jackson's iconic live performances, including extensive footage from the Triumph Tour with his brothers owned by the estate, and classic performances embodied in the video specials, Michael Jackson Live in Bucharest and Michael Jackson Live at Wembley. 4, a key moment from the estate's 2016 Spike Lee-directed documentary, Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall. And 5, unique footage from the estate's 2009 critically acclaimed feature film, Michael Jackson, This Is It, by far the highest grossing music documentary of all time. There's a picture of Michael in his estate, and it's a good picture of him where he's just smiling. Yes, Mr. Jackson definitely is missed. It's so weird to believe that he's gone. It's kind of crazy. About the estate of Michael Jackson, following in Michael's footsteps, the co-executors of the estate of Michael Jackson, John Branca and John McClain, continue to produce artistically exceptional and enormously successful ventures, resulting in, as reported, a 60 Minutes, the most remarkable financial and image resurrection in pop culture history. Upon release, Michael Jackson's This Is It became the highest grossing music documentary of all time. I already said that. A history-making touring show produced in partnership with Cirque du Soleil. Michael Jackson, the Immortal World Tour, played 4 continents, 157 cities, and was seen by 3.7 million fans and became the number 8 top-grossing tour of all time. The second venture between the estate and Cirque du Soleil, the critically acclaimed Michael Jackson 1, a permanent show at Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, gave Cirque its biggest opening ever in Las Vegas and continues to be one of the top shows in the city. In 2015, Thriller became the first album in RIAA, RIAA Gold and Platinum Program history to be certified 30 multi-platinum for U.S. sales, continuing the King of Pop's reign as the biggest selling artist of all time with worldwide sales of over 103 million for Thriller and 1 billion overall. Wow. That's amazing. In 2016, the estate released the documentary Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall, directed by Spike Lee. The documentary made its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival on January 24th, 2016, and its subsequent broadcast on Showtime became the channel's highest-rated music documentary of all time. Last year, the estate premiered Thriller 3D at the Venice Film Festival, and in October, its anime special, Michael Jackson's Halloween, made its debut on the CBS television network. So the estate's been very busy. They've been very active, very proactive in putting out great new products of Michael Jackson to keep his memory alive. So that's really cool. So I actually want to see some of that stuff. That's amazing. Wow, 103 million and 1 billion in sales. That's crazy. It's amazing and fascinating all at the same time. And in more entertainment news, right hot off the presses, Frank Ocean sued over Blonde album credits. So yes, folks, Frank Ocean from Channel Orange, that great solo album that he made, and his latest solo album, Blonde, and he's also a member of Odd Future, which means he's connected. He's part of that collective with Tyler, the Creator, and the Internet, and the Earl Sweatshirt. Being sued. So let's get to it. Singer Frank Ocean is facing a lawsuit from a producer over royalties for his Blonde album. The singer's real name, Christopher Bro, sued Omas Keith earlier this year. And Omas Keith is from the hip-hop production group Sa-Ra. So earlier this year, claiming that he hired him to produce master recordings for the album, Keith reportedly went on to register 11 of the tracks with the American Society of Composers, also known as ASCAP, Authors and Publishers, allegedly he co-wrote them, and Ocean filed the lawsuit to make sure his former producer didn't receive credits for writing the tunes. So Omas Key says he co-wrote these songs. Frank Ocean says that he didn't. He shouldn't get credit for it. Okay. So that's the first part of how this all went down. However, the 30-year-old also claimed he had already paid Keith a flat fee, insisting he didn't compose the music. So he's not entitled to royalties or credits. So he's not me. I'm Captain Keith. No, not me. Omas Keith. So I don't know Frank Ocean. So he didn't pay me. I was never there. Just saying. Okay. However, according to The Blast, Keith is denying the claims. I feel like I'm talking about myself in second or third person. It's weird. I'm sorry. However, according to The Blast, Keith is denying the claims and is now countersuing, alleging he co-produced and co-wrote many of the album's songs. He also alleges the flat fee agreement was for Ocean's previous album, Channel Orange, and he did not give permission for the new tracks to be released. He is requesting Ocean's lawsuit be thrown out and is seeking unspecified damages. He is also demanding a court order which will name him co-author of the songs. So we'll see how that story unfolds between Mr. Frank Ocean and Omas Keith. Once again, thank you all for listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. It's Captain Keith. Good people of the universe and the known earth, you are awesome. Thank you. Appreciate you. Hope you had a good time. I know I did. And I'll see you somewhere out in space.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.